welcome to a Nerd Science episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim Deal Double G. And we have all four hosts on tonight. I'm joined by Dirt from PopCultureNetwork.com. We also have Agent 70 here with us.
What's up, everybody?
And last but not least, we have Roddy Cat.
Hi, Mom.
Nice.
We want to remind everyone that we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on theclicknation.com. Make sure to follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/theclicknation. And also make sure to subscribe to the iTunes and Stitcher Radio feeds. Give us those nice 5-star reviews and leave feedback. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. And make sure to
use the hashtag
Comic Book Chronicles. Go ahead and share that on the social media accounts of your liking. So with that, before I forget, let's go ahead and mention that next week or this weekend, our very own Agent 70 will be attending the special edition New York.
That's right. Special edition NYC, the inaugural edition of special edition.
Anything you want to share about what you're expecting to experience there?
It's going to be a different vibe from New York Comic Con. It's in the same venue, Jacob Javits Center, but in one of the, for anyone that's familiar with the Jacob Javits Center, what they've been doing for New York Comic Con is putting the Artist Alley into what is like a satellite type building. It's a spin-off building from the main Javits Center. It kind of looks like an airplane hangar, but it's a great space. It's open. The ceilings are obviously very high because it does look like an airplane hangar. And, you know, it's just a great open space, and I'm wondering how they're going to lay it out. I have to look at the map again to see how to attack, you know, and I hate to say it that way, but I have to attack my the time that I do have to spare this weekend to go there, so I have to make the most of it as possible. So I'm curious to see the layout. In recent weeks, publishers have decided to come and support and have booths. So, you know, what started out as kind of like an all-artist thing has become really a mini con. Marvel's going to be there. DC's going to be there. There's going to be panel presentations. I think Archie is going to be there. I believe Valiant is going to be there. Let me pull up the website. And so I'm just not going off of maybe old information. But in any event, my understanding is that this is supposed to be, it's supposed to have kind of an indie vibe to it, but there's definitely a major publisher presence here, and they're providing what looks to me like the backbone of it. I'm hoping that, you know, it's just going to be like a nice crowd. They're still pushing tickets. They haven't stated that they're sold out. So I'm hoping there's a good crowd. I'm hoping to not get crushed with you know by people in the space. What's cool is that they're actually advertising in the subways and on the, you know, on billboards around the city. So there's, you know, there's some decent visibility around the city for this con. So, you know, hoping for a good turnout, but like I said, hoping that they don't oversell it and make it like a crowded mess. But Reed is getting, you know, Reed Pop, the producer of this and New York Comic Con, and they've been doing a much better job with crowd control. So hopefully that won't be a problem. Hopefully that's just a fear of mine that won't come to fruition. Oh, and by the way, anyone who's going to Special Edition NYC, if you've got a, you know, if you're getting in with a ticket, you should have an opportunity at least early Saturday to buy your New York Comic Con tickets, to order them.
What's that,
ahead of Yeah, ahead of the sale date, which is the on sale date, which is I believe June 18th. So heads up, everybody who wants to buy New York Comic Con tickets, they go on sale June 18th at noon.
And I guess we might put down the spreadsheet, but it's on the tip of my mind. But they also, New York also announced that they're doing that week long celebration for New York Comic Con, correct?
Yes, they're participating in that, and that is something that you can get with. I looked at this earlier today during lunch. Let me see if I can pull it up and get details.
Okay, yeah, we did have it on the spreadsheet. So yeah, Reed Pop announces New York Super Week as expansion to New York Comic Con.
Right. So what you get is they're going to have concerts, comedy series. Hold on. Stop scrolling. Here we go. New York Super Week card. Right. So, yeah, you get seating at these events with, you know, actually, wait, backtrack. What they're offering with the four-day pass and the VIP pass, and I guess you can pay extra, is one of these Super Week passes. And again, Super Week, they're going to have concerts, comedy shows, gaming events, lectures, podcasts, storytelling, food tastings, and more, making it a very, I hate to say well-rounded, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be all over the city in the five boroughs. And if you have this, if you get this pass, you'll be able to at least buy discounted tickets to a lot of these events.
So they're trying to capitalize on the big hype surrounding New York Comic Con and giving more events for the people to attend.
Sure. If anything, you know, the visibility of New York Comic Con has grown by leaps and bounds over the last few years. More and more, it's in the news. It's in the local news. It's in, you know, print and web. There's obviously cosplayers involved, so you see them on the street and in the subways. And, you know, now that they've expanded to 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you see them even more, especially, you know, the Thursdays and Fridays where people are still going to work, but there's all these cosplayers on, you know, moving around the subways and buses of Manhattan. So, you know, the visibility is very high nowadays, and, you know, this is a wise move on their part to really expand the activities and hopefully broaden the base. This, of course, plays, it contributes to a little bit of a rush to get tickets. So, you know, the more they expand, the more in demand these tickets are going to be, the Comic-Con tickets themselves. So I guess if anything, the more popular this gets, the faster you have to plunk down that money.
Okay. And to continue with the news, I believe it was last Friday, of course, after we recorded. First bit of news I saw was Marvel's C.B. Sibolsky is leaving the publishing side of Marvel to take another position in the company that has a title that hasn't been, I guess, formed yet.
No kidding.
He's basically going to be doing more traveling, the same amount of traveling, and still kind of, I guess, I think he's basically saying he's giving up his the talent search portion of his job, but he would still do more traveling. So, and of course, he'll still be on Twitter, he said, giving advice to people trying to break into the industry. Let's see. Another announcement concerning the Spider-Verse crossover and the Spider-Man family of books. There's going to be a miniseries called Edge of Spider-Verse, where it's going to be have stories from Jason Latour and Dustin Weaver and the guy that did the Spider-Noir book a couple years ago. Let me actually open the article here. Let's see. Miniseries which features work by a different creative team across each of its 5 issues. So Jason Latour, David Hine, Gerard Way does his Marvel debut. And there's going to be stories involving the Spider-Man Noir. A Spider-Woman story with Gwen Stacy being the one bitten by the radioactive Spider-Man or radioactive spider. Dustin Weaver's doing some sci-fi take on Spider-Man where he's writing and drawing.
Nice.
So, and that's going to lead into Spider-Verse. So that's kind of interesting. Vincent D'Onofrio is going to play Wilson Fisk in Marvel's Daredevil on Netflix.
That's big.
Yeah, that's the one thing that finally got me excited for that.
That's big. That, you know, they got a legit actor to play the Kingpin. Not that, you know, nothing wrong with Michael Clark Duncan. He had his moments, but, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio's, once you see how it is with these comic book websites, they put up the most Kingpin-like image they can find of Vincent D'Onofrio. And when I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, you know what? That works.
Well, you know,
and that's always a good sign,
right? It's funny because when he did Law and Order, Criminal Intent was the one he was on.
Right.
He, his character on the show was supposed to be becoming middle-aged, was kind of losing his mind, with age, and was supposed to be beaten down by the job. So right. He actually put on weight and deprived himself of sleep in order to look more like the character. So he actually put on like something like 60 pounds just for the sake of being on that show.
He's a big guy too, so that's a lot of
money. Yeah.
You know, if anyone remembers Private Pile.
Oh man, yeah.
Well, Private he was the killer in The Cell. In that movie, he was the serial killer that they get into his mind.
Right.
With all those people. And in that one, he was not lanky, but he was definitely toned down more for that one because that was more of a – had to be a more muscular type guy. So he's got the ability to, you know, do whatever it takes to look good for a role. So I've got all the faith that he's going to do a fantastic job on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah, my first thing I was thinking was like, okay, they got him. And just like you said, Dirt, he was doing Law and Order. I'm thinking I was thinking he might have been a little psychotic for that. I mean, play it a little psychotic for the role. But I figured, like, you know, just like I said, he's a great actor enough to be able to pull that off. So, I mean, pull off the Kingpin because he's just kind of just that subdued, but he can just snap just like that.
And I saw people saying that.
Double jacket, but anyway.
I saw people saying, like, he needed to gain weight to play Kingpin.
Anybody needs to gain weight to play the Kingpin.
He doesn't have to be some big fat ass, though.
True enough.
Not my opinion, at least.
He's got to look convincing, though, as someone who is big but still athletic. So they've got to find a middle ground.
And if need be, they'll pad the suit a little.
Sure.
My dog is coming to join us tonight.
Mic it up.
Movie.
Okay. Let's see. I skipped over Ant-Man finally getting a director.
Yay.
Comedy director Peyton Reed, helming Ant-Man. Adam McKay, doing script right. Have no real opinion on this.
The only thing I said about it was on Twitter was I was thinking when Adam McKay was supposed to be doing the actor director, and I was thinking, well, we're gonna get Eric O'Grady. So
let's fit all the Ant-Man into this one movie.
Sure.
All right. Let's see, what else do we have? Marvel's Deathlok gets an ongoing series, which had been teased already.
Sure. Pretty much.
Big surprise. Sarcasm.
From Nathan Edmondson, who is also writing Black Widow and Punisher.
Sure. You know, listen, if the character is wielding a gun, they're going to give it to Nathan Edmondson.
And we'll be talking about Deathlok later on.
And art from, I forget the guy's name. Let me click on the link and see. Because I want to give both sides of creative a shout out. Who is it? They're basically the same people doing the Original Sin story for Deathlok. Who is it? Perkins. Mike Perkins. So, look for that in the fall. Marvel Comics also announces Hawkeye versus Deadpool limited series.
Is that a Colin Bunn series?
What was that?
Is that Colin Bunn doing that?
No, it's the regular one of the regular Deadpool.
Jerry Duggan.
Yeah, Duggan's doing it. And IGN had an interview with him, which I read quickly, saying basically, I guess the Colin Bunn books are another part of editorial. Jordan D. White is over that. And this one's being done by Sanaa Amanat, who is the regular editor of
Ms. Marvel.
Hawkeye. Yes. And apparently, Cullen Bunn has more limited series planned in the future, and Duggan said this series doesn't interfere with those.
So this is a Hawkeye miniseries that has Deadpool in it, as opposed to a Deadpool miniseries with Hawkeye in it.
That's one way to look at it.
Okay.
Sure.
This should just replace the Hawkeye book that doesn't come out anymore.
Hey, watch your mouth.
I'm done reading that book. It was fun while it lasted.
I've heard people saying that.
I haven't read the last two issues that came out. I looked at them. I was like, nah, I don't feel like it anymore. It lost its luster to me.
Well, and the issue 19, I think, got pushed back to July.
Wow. Is that what I heard?
So
there's rumors because of art, not necessarily the writing part, but no one really knows or is saying.
Yeah, I heard that originally that it got stuff got pushed back because AHA stuff with AHA. Maybe that's the reason the whole thing's kind of
really is that how it, is it really pronounced AHA? Take on. Oh, poor Tim. He doesn't get the 80s reference.
I was born in the 80s.
Yeah, but I think that song's still older than you.
That's funny.
That's even a comic book themed video.
That's true. That is true. That, yeah. We'll make sure to post a link to a YouTube video later in the post-show wrap-up. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And last but not least, this was announced earlier today. Apparently, Nikki Fine has a rumor about DC's upcoming movie lineup that DC planned to announce at San Diego Comic-Con this summer. So let's take a look, see at the supposed list. Parts of it make me laugh, mostly because if, according to their list, DC wants to put out a movie. Three movies each year. Let's see him get one out a year first. But let's see. Supposedly May 2016 is Batman v Superman. July 2016, same year, 2 months apart, is Shazam. And then Christmas 2016 is Sandman.
Do you really count that?
May 2017 is Justice League. July 2017, Wonder Woman. Christmas 2017, Flash and Green Lantern team up. And May 2018, Man of Steel 2. So that's all they have.
Are they really counting that Sandman in there like that? I mean, I don't really know that much about the character, but...
I don't either.
I figured that was a kind of a side issue. I guess that was like Constantine and them, I suppose.
Well, I don't know that it would necessarily have to cross over with all the others, but it would still be
true.
From the publisher as part of their, lineup.
Yeah.
So, quick thoughts. At least Man of Steel will get a real sequel, if this is true.
With no Ben Affleck.
the Brave and the Bold one seemed like it could be interesting.
Oh, the Green Lantern and Flash. So will the movie Flash be a totally different Flash than TV Flash?
That would suck.
Probably.
It would have that would kill all sort of, you know.
I guess there was
some Man of Steel. Man of Steel has nothing to do with Smallville. I mean, why would Why would Flash need to be the same Flash?
That's true.
And I feel like that Wonder Woman one is not going to happen. But
people are already mad that Shazam movie is planned before the Wonder Woman,
right?
And people were saying that The Rock should be playing Black Adam.
Didn't he express an interest in doing that? Actually,
probably.
Or it was brought to his attention to that being the case or something. I don't know. But I felt like
Every so often, Rock just sees a character who he wants to be, so he just starts tweeting nonstop in the hopes that he'll get the job.
Yeah.
It's like he did that with Jon Stewart Green Lantern for a long time, too.
Yeah, I remember that.
That could still be a possibility.
Yeah, still.
I'd take him as Black Adam better, though.
It'd be wise for DC to cast him in something before Marvel scoops him up.
Absolutely.
Marvel gets Dave Bautista. DC gets The Rock. They have a rematch at WrestleMania where they come out in full costume with a supporting cast around them, and the movie theme is their entrance music.
I'm for it.
That's funny.
I'm in a steel cage with Lex Luthor as the guest referee.
That's funny.
Wait, Luke Cage is the referee? What?
No, Lex Luthor.
Luthor. Okay. All right, time to review some books for the week. Where should we start? Of course, make sure to go to dclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com to see comic book reviews, which Dirt and myself have posted. Let's actually start with yours, Dirt. Tell us all about the wonderful book that is Figment.
Oh, okay. Well, then hold on a second. I thought you were going the other way, so I was grabbing the wrong cover.
Haha.
Throw me off.
Fake out.
All right. If anybody remembers the old Disney Epcot Center ride, Journey into Imagination with Figment, this is actually based off of that old Epcot ride, although it's been updated a couple times over the years. But this is set in London in the early 1900s. And our lead character is working at this scientific institute where they are trying to develop new ways of developing energy, I guess is the best way to say it. And everyone is making different machines for ionizing atoms or playing with magnets or whatever, trying to tap into some new source of energy. And, of course, our hero has decided he's going to tap into the power of the human mind in order to create his energy source. And his initial attempt brings forth Figment, the purple dragon. And, obviously as amazing as it is that he brought this this dragon out of his imagination, that's not an energy source. So he tries again and ends up ripping open basically a rift in reality between the real world and the world of imagination, and somehow the world of imagination is an actual place that you can go to. But this first issue is really centered on developing his character. And I'm trying to find, he's got one of those weird names. I'm trying to find the in the issue right here. Blarian Mercurial is his name. They call him Blair. He's our lead character. And this first issue is all about developing him as a character, giving you some background on him, how he's in a tough situation. He's the bread earner for his family. He's got to make this work. He's in many ways brilliant, but at the same time, he's brilliant enough to be dangerous because he can do all these things, but he doesn't always think them through all the way. So he's kind of the everyman, and he's surrounded. Most of the characters that surround him are more or less kind of token villains that you expect, the people that talk down to him, they're mean to him, whatever. But he does a really good job of making him the everyman you identify with, making him the underdog you want to see succeed. Like, it hits all the right notes in developing that character. And the artwork in this book is just phenomenal. Like, I can't – it's hard to explain really what the artwork looks like. It's it looks almost like a cross between an animated style and a painted style. It never gets too cartoony and too zany or anything like that, but it is exaggerated sometimes. Let's see. The artist is Philippe Andrade.
Captain Marvel artist.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. But the way it looks in here, it's the world that he's in, because it's the early 1900s, because it's London, they made it very steampunk-ish. Like, it's not necessarily like he's surrounded by tons of these wacky-looking contraptions, but you definitely get that feel that there's that vibe coming to it, because they are, you know, dealing with the Industrial Revolution, and there is a lot of gears and hoses and, you know, boilers and things like that that add to the look of the world that he's in. So they do a very good job with the art and the coloring of kind of establishing London as being kind of dark, and it's got some earth tones. It's a little dirty. There's a lot of machinery. Everything has kind of that feel to it. And then as he's ripping open this rift into the world of imagination, you're seeing bright colors. You're seeing lots of, you know, pinks and purples and bright greens and things that you don't see in his world because of the Industrial Revolution and everything. So they really did a good job of thinking everything through. You know, the way there are token characters, but they're the perfect ones that need to be there to get the pull from you they have to get. You know, Figment, for being this little purple imaginary dragon that comes to life, he's kind of like a small child in many ways. I mean, he's intelligent, but he's still kind of excited to see the world around him. He's asking a lot of questions. He wants to see everything and read everything. And, you know, he's excited for everything. So he's really a likable character on his own. So this is just one of those books that I got done with the book and I loved it. I loved the characters. I loved the artwork. I loved the tone. This just did everything right. This is everything that you need a first issue to be. And so this is actually going to be my click of the week.
Wow.
I was going to ask, is it, I'm assuming, I know it's a mini. Is it a one shot or a
issue mini? I want to say it's 6 issues.
Oh, wow.
I don't think it actually says on the cover. The cover just says number one, but it is a mini series. Maybe it's 4 issues.
So that's not Lockheed on the cover. Okay.
I was thinking Peace Dragon.
You know, I remember in the solicit seeing this and not being familiar with the, you said it was a Disney World or Disneyland?
Epcot Center.
Oh, Epcot Center.
Yeah.
So, you know, not being familiar with that, you know, at first glance, at first blush, when I saw this in the solicits, I was thinking, what on earth are they putting Lockheed in now? But I'm glad that, you know, that this is a completely separate story. It's something that is new to a lot of people, probably. So I'm glad to see that they executed it well and you liked it.
Well, and I will admit I have a little bit of bias because I went to Epcot
Full disclosure.
Center. Yeah, I went to Epcot Center in 84, I think it was. Shortly after this opened at Epcot Center. And I loved it, you know, as a little kid going through it. And I got a stuffed Figment doll. So I have, like, this little stuffed animal of the purple dragon. And it was at my parents' house. And maybe 2-3 months ago, we were at my parents' house, and they were cleaning out a bunch of stuff, and they found this box that had the stuffed animal, the dragon, in it. And my daughter immediately saw it, and she was like, oh, can I have that? And I was like, oh, sure. So she grabbed that, and, you know, she's been carrying it around up in her room. And so I kind of have a little soft spot, you know.
For That's cool. There's no, oh, sound effect.
But there should be.
Yeah. We got to create that.
But, yeah, no, it's just, it was really good. It's just really well executed. And also, you know, part of it is the expectation that you're going in. I know that this is a licensed property. This is from Disney. Disney owns Marvel, so there's probably some sort of editorial, you know, hey, figure out how to make some stories out of our stuff, like they did with Seekers of the Weird. which was a recent miniseries from Marvel that was based off a Disney ride that was in development. So, you know, you kind of knew that in an editorial sense, they had a gun to their head. But they Jim Zub is the writer on this. And he did Skull Kickers. If you've ever read Skull Kickers from Image. So it's got some of the same kind of humor and the same tone that's in that book, which is also a very enjoyable book. So it was just really well done.
And he's worth a follow on Twitter. And checking out his website, jimzub.com. He gives a lot of tips and tips of the trade for, you know, working on comics.
So, yeah, good stuff. Everybody read it.
And stay tuned for that It's a Small World book.
Where it just repeats It's a Small World on every page.
Yep.
I'm kind of interested to see what Mark is just totally off track. But I'm kind of interested to see what announcements and what decisions Marvel makes for writers for the Star Wars line when they start producing those books. That's my phone ring.
Phones are ringing.
You know right now. They're calling you right now.
Let me check that.
Hey, put it on speakerphone. Oh,
right. That's funny.
Man. All right, who wants to do a review?
Let's see. Look, I just added a couple of books to my list.
I got one.
Go ahead.
Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 2.
Yes.
You know what? The best thing I can say about this book is I really want a Daughters of the Dragon book, and I say that every time I see either one or both of them show up because they do in this book.
Right.
But this is kind of shaping up to where this could very well be a pretty decent ongoing, I think. Or could, you know, in the right hands. I mean, the story's kind of coming out kind of slow, but
yes, it's a very slow developing story. You know, I jotted down, you know, this week for the first time in a while, I jotted down a couple of quick notes on some of these books that I had read the other day. Mm-hmm. And what I wrote about Deadly Hands of Kung Fu number 2 is that, you know, we get some guest stars coming into place, you know, namely the Daughters of the Dragon, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, to me, the best part of this book is Shang-Chi's narration / inner dialogue or monologue.
Agreed.
It's the best part. You know, it's just sort of listening to him kind of think his way through the situation and think his way through the story. It's, you know, it's kind of a different tact. It's a different, you know, it's a different means of telling the story. So. You know, I'm enjoying that for now. I don't know how long that'll last. You know, they'll probably just do a kind of a more traditional superhero story to change it up every once in a while. But I'm kind of enjoying listening to him, you know, kind of wax Bruce Lee, you know, kind of wax philosophical, really, you know?
Right. I think this is just a mini series, so this is not going to be too much longer.
True.
But yeah, if they did decide to make it an ongoing, yeah, I would agree with that. Like, kind of mix it up between like a mix of this and maybe some Moon Knight type action or something. I don't know why that one just popped in my head, but I enjoyed the reading. And how many times you get to see Razor Fist, which I don't really care about, but hey, you know what? If you got to do it.
I remember when Razor Fist was first introduced in like the early 90s, like in the Marvel Comics Presents books.
Right.
And I was always taken aback by his appearance. Like, really? They replaced his hands with, you know, with swords? And all the stupid nerdy fanboy questions come to mind, right?
Right.
Like, how does he do X or Y with the swords as hands? Right. Is that why he wears a stupid getup? That's all he can put on. Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
So I missed the Shang-Chi review?
Yeah.
Yeah,
would you think?
Well, just like we said, it's kind of a slow building story, but it has some really good parts. But with Shang-Chi's narration and the fact that Daughters of the Dragon show up,
right? Right. In my opinion, the best part of the book is sort of the inner narration that kind of moves the story along in Shang, you know, from Shang-Chi's perspective.
Okay. Let's see. I guess I can pick one. Let me go with... Where's my list? Let me give some love to Avengers Undercover number 5.
Oh, I did. I read that. And that's my list.
So Baron Zemo's made his offer to the kids, but he's not forcing them to join up with the, was it the Masters of Evil?
Right.
So he sort of sends the kids off, a couple kids off with his three lieutenants, who are Damian Hellstrom, son of Satan, Madam Mask, and Constrictor.
Mm-hmm.
And they go Torin Begalia. And it had already been advertised that the kids were going to infiltrate the Masters of Evil and try to take them down from the inside, I sort of forgot about that as I was reading the story, because they were given option A of joining the Masters of Evil, or option B, not join with them, but then be taken by S.H.I.E.L.D. for murdering Arcade on video. And they themselves come up with taking option C, which is, let's pretend to join them and take them down from the inside to clear our names. So that's their plan. We'll see if every member of the team, well, already one member of the team wasn't down with that. But we'll see what other members decide, if they maybe like playing bad guy and who sticks with the original plan. And Kev Walker's art is great. Dennis Hopeless, I keep saying, needs some more Marvel books. I'd like to see him writing some more stuff. He tweeted back at me that, stay tuned a couple weeks ago. So Nice. Hopefully some stuff will be coming out from him.
Real quick on this book, any fans of The Runaways, there is a returning character from The Runaways, the initial run of Runaways, that makes a return in this book, and we'll see how that develops in future issues.
Hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. No, this is an intriguing read. I'm willing to keep to stay on for the monthly ride and see how this goes.
Okay. Let me also mention quickly Starlight number 4. From Mr. Mark Millar, who keeps giving us shout-outs on his comics, at least on the final pages. Let me see if I can find that photo. Starlight, there we go. Let me jump to the last page. See if I can do a nice screen share. So how the hell do you do this? Cameraman. How do you do it, Doug? Is it cameraman?
No, you go to the left-hand side of the Hangout, the second icon that pops out of the toolbar.
That was
the
green monitor.
Yeah.
The green one.
Okay, so. Wait.
Colorblind, it's the green one. And did we lose Tim?
Hello.
He froze.
He tried to share a screen and he froze. Yikes.
Oh, great. Now the whole show is going to collapse. He's going to disappear.
That's comedy. Hello. Hello.
It was too much for his 286 laptop.
Oh! You could probably hear us. That's the best part. Oh, no. He dropped out.
We're still going. We're still live.
We're still on.
I think we get 60 seconds or something for him to come back in before it drops us out.
Really?
I think so. There's some time limit that gives him a chance to come back in before the whole thing collapses on us.
No kidding. No! It's going to collapse! No!
Well, quick, did anyone else want to talk about another comic while we're waiting for him to reboot?
There he is. There he goes.
Hello?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Welcome back.
Okay. Well, that's not how you do a screen share.
I tried to open the PDF, and that just killed my Hangout, I guess. Was I the only one to leave?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, at least the recording kept
going. We were actually trying to, stop from crashing,
Well, either way, I guess Mark Millar is still putting up the 5-star reviews. that we did from issue one on his final pages. So that's cool of him. How much of my review did y'all get before I left? Did you get any of it?
We just got that you were trying to do a screen share.
Right. Yeah.
That's it. Okay, so I was talking to myself. Okay, so.
Oh, no.
Like you.
So, Starlight number four, there's, like I said, Duke McQueen has been captured by the people that have overtaken the world. There's a jailbreak. He meets the rebellion. And there's a swerve at the very end that I saw coming a mile away.
Okay.
It's still a fun book. I'm enjoying this a lot more than, say, like Jupiter's Legacy. MPH just started, so I can't really rate it against that.
The swerve that you saw coming a mile away, does the swerve make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a swerve just to have a swerve.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if the swerve makes sense, then great. It's only when the swerve comes out of nowhere that it's like a Vince Russo moment that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, another, I, of course, keep recommending it. It's a fun book. Art by Goran Parlov, I think is how you say his name. And, of course, you see the variant cover by Travis Cherist on Dirt Screen right now.
Oh, this was the variant?
Well, actually, no, it's not. It's the regular cover. Well, actually, I take that back because they have it in the credits at the beginning. Okay, yeah, it's cover A, so I guess that's the main cover. I read an interview where he was saying, this was a couple months ago, where he was saying Travis Cherist did a cover for him, and for some reason I want to say that it was the variant. Who wants to go next?
Is this one 5 stars though?
I guess I'd knock it down 4 for seeing the swerve.
I see. Like,
that's fair.
It was a neat, you know, just because I saw it coming doesn't make it less a main part of the story. Now, actually, I might try to write for it since he keeps putting us in his book and whatnot.
Let me throw out something. I see that Roddy Cat also read All New Invaders, number 6.
Yes.
And I'm happy to say that James Robinson, who's writing this, he was keeping me on board because I wasn't thrilled with how the first story arc went. You know, how it sort of wrapped itself. You know, if you recall, the last time we spoke about All New Invaders number 5, I kind of complained that the story wrapped up a little neatly. This issue revolves around the introduction of a new character who I'm happy to see. You know, a female Asian character introduced. That's kind of cool. She's Asian American. She has light based powers.
Dazzler. And,
Dazzler or they even say in the book that her powers are similar to Monica Rambeau's. Jim Hammond actually says this. And speaking of Jim Hammond, he kind of plays it's not a surprise that he's playing a central role in this book because Cap. The other, you know, traditional invaders have their own books or have, you know, the spotlight in other books. So it makes sense that Jim Hammond would be, you know, spotlighted in this book.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it's nice to see he's kind of a thinking man, you know, thinking man or thinking android, you know, thinking synthesoid, you know, kind of hero. You know, he's not as, he's definitely not, punch first and ask questions later type of guy.
He has mellowed with age, some would say.
I would say. You know what's funny is that he's almost like, well, because of the way they play the character and because of the origin, you know, he's the Vision with a real personality.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's kind of sad, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now you have me thinking about when he disassembled Vision and the
So I mean, like I said at the very beginning of my review, I'm happy to say that James Robinson is keeping me engaged in the book. I thought this was a good kind of kickoff to a new storyline, especially it being an original Sin tie-in.
Which brings me to where my disappointment comes in, because I was, I guess I should have known it wasn't going to be the case, but I was thinking the original Sin part was going to be with Cap and Namor due to the Illuminati stuff. But like I said, I should have known better.
Oh, but that's going to be in other books. That's the thing.
Right.
Oh, you could have speculated it has something to do with Winter Soldier, who's in this book.
Yeah.
But yeah, they'll save that for the main series.
Right.
Right.
So, like I said, they keep it revolving around Jim Hammond and, the Invaders as a whole.
Right. This was a book I was thinking about dropping, but I don't know, it kind of got interesting with the ending to the last issue and the art, the new artist in this one. I flipped through it. I didn't have a chance to read it. Looks pretty good. I'm gonna stick around for a little while longer. We'll
sure.
See.
Sure. I don't know if I would give it the strongest recommendation, but it's definitely, if you've got room on your reading list, it's not a bad idea to pick it up.
Cool. Okay. Who all read All New X-Men 28?
Here.
I did, but...
Oh, you wish you hadn't?
Kinda.
Go ahead.
Speak.
Well, no, isn't that? Don't reason because that's because I haven't been keeping up with the series proper. Even though this is, I'm not gonna say self-contained because I'm not really certain. But
yeah, this is one of those you kind of have to be at least have.
Yeah,
been
this reading. Is not new reader friendly. That's how I put it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's not new reader friendly.
So it wasn't because of stuff in the book, though.
I am enjoying the future of Brotherhood. And back and forth from the present to the future, telling sort of filling us in on their background and motivations.
Right, and then how we got to where we are. That's what was great about this issue, because Bendis he definitely did not tell this story in sequence and in sequential order. We finally get to find out. So this is where they've been, and this is how they came back, and this is what's going on now. So what was good about this issue is that if you have been reading it, this was a great kind of get you caught up on why we are where we are, and then back to the action.
Definitely.
So I appreciate it for that.
Kind of looking forward to seeing what of course, if it's a Bendis book, there will be no resolution by the time this little arc is over with.
Of course not. We expect too much.
Who would like to go next?
Here. Original Sins number one.
I don't think any of us read it, but go ahead.
Yeah, I just finished a little near the beginning of the show. So
I did read the Lockjaw story, but that's the only one I read.
Yeah, and that was pretty much the breeziest one. But Tim, here's something for you. The New Avengers show up. I mean, okay. Young Avengers, excuse me, Young Avengers.
Yeah.
Nice.
So basically, there are three stories. There's the first story, which I'll come back to. There's the New Avengers story, which I guess you could have seen coming, considering Exterminatrix was in the main book. So you can kind of where that could lead to if you've read Young Avengers. That particular story in itself was kind of It has the humor of the Young Avengers book, so you know that is there. I don't know. I can't remember who wrote it. The Lockjaw book was, the Lockjaw story was real cute, but I kind of want to say unnecessary.
Oh, it was definitely. Well, and the thing was, the Lockjaw story, Original Sin is all about uncovering these memories, and so apparently Lockjaw's memory was of a bone somewhere on the moon that we've forgotten about.
Right.
But the first time I read it, I was flipping through and I see Lockjaw, and so I'm like, okay, well, I'll take a look at this one real quick because this looks kind of like a funny little thing. Mm-hmm. The first time I read it, I thought he was digging up the Watcher's bones.
Oh,
right. And so that was the first thing that came to my mind. I'm like, wait a minute, he's digging up the Watcher's body to gnaw on his bones because
no, where's
And turned out it was just a bone he had left when they were still on the moon or something.
Right.
That's awful.
It's not what it was, but it's still, it, I was intrigued for a second.
Right.
So anyway. So,
but yeah. So look at that. That was cute. And the Young Avengers stories, they're all three, well, excuse me, the Young Avengers story is going to continue the first story, which has to do with Deathlok coming back.
Okay.
So you kind of get a, I guess is a, you get a teaser to whatever his ongoing is going to come into, I presume, because they're basically just, the story was just to bring him back in. So, and it was a pretty decent read because I really don't know that much about Deathlok, and it doesn't really go into pretty much anything about him per se, but. But it's just like, hey, they have a convenient way to bring them back in, and there you go.
Dirt.
What?
Let's hear about that other book you thought I was going to ask you about to start the review portion of the show off.
Do you mean Infinity Man and the Forever People, number one?
Yes.
Okay, so keep in mind that this is a Dan DiDio project. He is the co-publisher for DC Comics. He knows where everything is going for the next couple of years. So he has decided that he is going to write this particular book. So obviously this book is going to play some part of the upcoming, upcoming Darkseid saga. We know Darkseid's coming. He's going to be doing something. And these characters, old Jack Kirby fourth world characters, that somehow it's going to tie in, and it's got to be a big deal if he's going to be involved in it. But the other thing is that Keith Giffen is drawing this, and I've always really liked Keith Giffen. Back when he was doing Legion of Superheroes in the 80s, 90s, like I loved all that stuff, collected all that stuff. There's a big reason I stuck with a lot of that stuff. So picking up this book, slipping through it first before you actually start reading it, Keith Giffen's artwork, it's not only his style that he developed doing those Legion books, but he's also channeling a lot of Jack Kirby in. So he does a lot of the little Jack Kirby things, the way Jack Kirby would draw, like the highlight lines on the characters, the way he would draw objects in space using a lot of circles. You can kind of see a little bit on the cover, but doing that old Kirby effect, the way the fourth world looks like the old Kirby drawings from the 70s, the way he would do a lot of the pipes and the structures and all that kind of stuff. So, and the costumes all have that classic Kirby, you know, design style to them. So flipping through it, I love the artwork. The coloring on it is phenomenal, and I couldn't wait to sit down and actually read the book. And therein lies the problem, is I actually read the book. The problem is this is a first issue, right? So in the first issue, I'll take, you know, Figment, since that was another number one came out this week, I'll use that as a counter argument against this book. In Figment, you have a new character that you've never seen before. So you get some of his background, you see the way people treat him, you have an idea of why it's important that he succeed at his job, you know his motivation, and then the story takes off. In this book, you have a bunch of people from the fourth world. They are coming to Earth, and that's all you know. That's all you get out of this first issue. You don't understand their relationships with each other. You don't understand why they're coming to Earth. When they come to Earth, they meet another character. You don't know who that guy is. You don't know his relationship to these people. You don't know what their mission is going to be. You don't know really anything. This book is just all about the story of taking a bunch of people in one spot and how they traveled to a different spot. And that's it. And to make things worse, this is called Infinity Man and the Forever People. Now, if you don't know the legend, of Infinity Man, if you're not familiar with the Forever People, then you sit down and read this book. Infinity Man is not in this book at all. Doesn't appear once. He's not.
Is he on the cover?
He's on the cover.
Is that the guy?
Yeah, false advertising.
He's the blue guy in the background. His title is in blue at the top of the book. He gets top billing, but he's not in this issue at all. Now, because I'm somewhat familiar with Jack Kirby in the Fourth World, I know that these characters, the Forever People, when they combine, they almost do kind of like an organic Power Rangers type thing where all their energy channels together, they disappear, and the Infinity Man appears. And so...
So is Captain Planet or Cyforce.
Right, right. Something along those lines. That's the basic idea behind it. But in this issue, never mentioned once. It's never mentioned that these characters have any sort of connection. It's never mentioned that Infinity Man even exists. He's not in this at all. He's not referred to in any way. So this is probably the best example of what not to do with the first issue. It didn't explain the characters. It didn't give you their backgrounds. It didn't explain their relationships. It didn't explain their motivation. And it doesn't explain why you need to tune in again next month. The only thing you get is that the final, four pages, show a character attacking a bunch of people on another planet. But those people are not mentioned by these characters. These people aren't looking for them. There's no line you can draw between this attack at the end and these characters that you see at the beginning, other than the fact that obviously they're going to bump into each other at some point down the line. But this is the absolute worst possible storytelling that you can do in one of these books. So I gave this book a 2 out of 5 just because I like the artwork enough. And I'm a fan of the characters, but really, this is a big letter F for coming out with the first issue.
Yep.
That sounds about right. I don't even have to read it now. Awesome.
Now, who knows? By the time the first 6 issues come out, maybe it's a fantastic story in the trade, you know? Mm-hmm. But as a monthly comic series, it's a big failure.
I'm not familiar with DeDio. Has he done much writing prior to, I guess, his position now? Or
he did the OMAC series for DC a couple of years ago, and he's done. He never really seems to do a lot on a series, but if like Outsiders a couple of years ago lost their writer and they didn't have anybody to fill in, so he did it for 6 issues. When they do a lot of the like 80-page specials or an annual or something, and it's a bunch of short stories, he might do one of the short stories there. He did a couple of the Villains Month books, which were, those just ended up being character studies on the villains, so he just did a couple of those. So, he dabbles here and there, and I'm sure he understands the format of writing comics and how you, technically put together a script, but this was just not executed well at all.
So he's not done anything notable?
Not really. He's more of the business end type guy,
Mm-hmm. There you go. Stick to your day job, then, Didio.
Didio.
Some people have problems with his day, how he runs his day job.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, well.
If this is any evidence. Yeah, I knew nothing about these characters, so I wasn't checking it out anyway.
And but now I have even less reason.
This book reminds me of Aquaman and the Others. It's like, why?
Yeah, that was another book that the first issue came along and they didn't explain any of the characters. They didn't give you any background. If you didn't know who they already were, then there was no point. Like, it was very unfriendly to new readers, mm-hmm. And this is the same way.
Do you get the sense that they're trying to do almost kind of like Marvel said, hey, we're going to pull these, characters out for XYZ reason, whether we use them for anything else or not, just to let people know they're still around?
Well, they are, like I said, they are Fourth World, which right. is the whole Jack Kirby, New Gods and Apocalypse, New Genesis, Dark Side, High Father, all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
And they've made it clear in the Justice League books that Darkseid is returning to Earth. In Earth 2, they mentioned that they had kidnapped Darkseid's daughter when he tried to invade Earth at the beginning of the New 52. And so she's being held somewhere, and Darkseid's trying to find her. And he's trying to make his way to the right Earth. He attacked Earth 2, and that's what set off the whole Earth 2 storyline. And it looks like, you know, after he's done decimating Earth 2, he's going to move on to our Earth, or Earth 1, or whatever you want to call it.
616.
Obviously, this is somehow going to tie in with Darkseid and tie in with the New Gods and tie in with, you know, that whole saga and be some sort of piece of that puzzle. And probably Infinity Man, you know, will be some part of that big battle in the crossover, you know, of 2015 or whatever it's going to end up being. But you only know that by following the publishing side of things. You don't know that from actually reading this particular comic.
And I would like to point out that I read earlier this week that already the creative team is changing. Well, the art side is changing. Tom Grummett's doing issue 2, and Jim Starlin is drawing issue 3.
Which, I mean, that's not a bad lineup as far as talent goes, but I hate when that's going to change the art style pretty dramatically as it goes through. And I always hate when they do that.
Yeah, and I guess because Giffen also writes, right?
Yes, he actually writes a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so probably doesn't have time to do much of the writing or the drawing.
Writing part of Future's End right now.
Isn't he on Justice League 3000? Is he one of those guys?
Yeah, okay. Because he wrote Justice League America back in the 90s on that run where it was much more comedy. Based and the brouhahas and all of that kind of stuff. So he's got a very good track record for writing. I kind of get the sense though that he's, because of his work on Future's End and whatever else, that he's more of like plotting on this one, and Dan DiDio is the one actually, you know, putting the story together.
Right.
Hey, wait, these people showed up in Young Justice, didn't they?
That's what I heard.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
I think so.
Dorkikas were trying to educate me on them earlier in the week. Yeah, they showed up in an episode of Young Justice.
I remember watching that.
In Justice League Unlimited or Unite, whatever the cartoon was.
Oh, yeah, the second season, whatever, second, third.
Yeah. So they've been used before. I think every time those episodes came up, I just didn't care and didn't pay attention to them. Supposedly, Superboy's motorcycle came from whatever dark. What world are they from? Apocalypse. It's funny, like, you know, Marvel has Apocalypse the character, then DC has Apocalypse the world, Darkseid, who is almost like Apocalypse.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's hard to keep all these characters straight.
Yeah, but DC did it first.
What's gonna happen when Dawn of Justice ends and Darkseid turns around to stare at the camera and grin? Is that guy from the Avengers?
Well, wasn't that the joke back when they were doing those DC Marvel crossovers, is that Thanos and Darkseid were going at it?
Maybe.
All right. Well, anyway, does anybody have a good comic to talk about?
I'm going to bring up Captain Marvel number 4 because unlike this book, the main character shows up.
What?
Yes. What?
Captain Marvel number 4.
Although she didn't show up in Guardians.
Guardians, right.
It's next week. Or next issue, whatever.
Yeah. So, that jerk aside, or that, you know, whatever aside, it was a decent read. It's basically going back to, because in the start of the book, it had her kind of going in midstream in whatever mission she was on. In this issue, we kind of get back up to speed, leading that led up to the I guess the 2 weeks that the 2 weeks later that the book started on. What happened?
I knew of those scenes at the end looked familiar.
Yeah.
That's funny. But go on.
So, yeah, but so we basically kind of get the group kind of coming together and why Carol's doing what she's doing with this ragtag team of misfit refugees. So now that we got that straight, we will probably start getting some actual story behind it or what have you. But like I said, it was a pretty decent read for that.
Right. And if you followed the cosmic stuff that was happening, during
Infinity
and in the Avengers books, this definitely follows up on that.
Right.
You know, there's definitely some play, you know, obviously that's where a lot of the Guardian story is coming from too, where, you know, you're getting a lot of the Spartax, you know, all of a sudden becoming, you know, like they became major players after having never existed before, really. I mean, they did, but, you know, not on the level that we now know them to be. Lots of follow up from that and some of the aftermath of Infinity as well. You know, we have the story of refugees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of it's kind of a nice follow up to that. It's a natural follow up and seeing Captain Marvel in space and dealing with this. And I'm hoping that we really get to see her cut loose. I'm kind of curious, you know, the historian, the comic historian, the character historian side of me is kind of curious to see where they're going to establish her power levels.
Or whether they bring up any of her old powers again.
Exactly, because they teased a little bit of Binary, they teased mm-hmm. a little bit of, you know, some of the other stuff, so I'm kind of curious to see where they put her finally.
Very, very good.
I think this is one of the books I'll be cutting from the reading list.
I liked it. It was pretty good this week.
I have nothing really against it. Stuff's just gotta, you know.
Gotta go.
Stuff's gotta go. And I wasn't really reading it too much before in the previous volume anyway. So, but yeah, I hope it continues to do well. So, yeah.
Go ahead.
Nah. I forget what I was gonna say.
I was just gonna throw out something I enjoyed reading, surprisingly enough, is Mighty Avengers number 11.
Oh, good.
I did too.
You know, I enjoyed reading this despite, you know, and what's funny is that I didn't mind Greg Land's art nearly as much in this because, I don't know, for whatever reason, I wasn't able to, you know, even though I was able to spot it, let me not lie, of course I was able to spot where he's probably lifting straight from a picture. You know, it's probably light boxing it straight off a photo. But ultimately, you know, it didn't affect my enjoyment of the story, which is good.
Yeah,
I'll give Al a lot of credit. It was a pretty, it is original Sentai, and you know, let's not forget that. So what we do is what's revealed is a little bit of Luke Cage.
Yeah,
you know, and we have Luke Cage's some long lost secret that he finds out, and it involves his father. So you know that was kind of cool to see, a little bit of common origins with Blade and the Blue Marvel. I'm always glad to see the Blue Marvel being integrated into the Marvel universe. So
right, I'm really liking how this is kind of bringing all those little loose ends from the past couple of books together. Even though whether it was supposed to be like that because of original sin or not, like they're just kind of bringing it in and pushing it along. So, and plus that whole 70s vibe, you know, with the flashbacks is, I was kind of digging that.
Yeah, I was reading it with my girlfriend sitting next to me, and she even noticed. She was like, hey, that's Morgan Freeman. talking about Luke Cage's father. So then I had to explain the whole photo referencing that Greg Land does. So then we played the guessing game of who's that character supposed to be? Who's that
one? Richard Roundtree is in here.
Right. Yeah.
Richard Roundtree is definitely in this book.
When I first saw Luke's dad, I was thinking, I was like, wait a minute, why is Rhodey's dad in here for a second?
He's in the Iron Patriot.
Right.
And I was like, oh, wait, that's not. I didn't get the reference. Okay.
So I'll go ahead and say it. This is probably going to be my pick of the week.
I enjoyed reading this. It'll be close. I'm gonna give it some thought still. All right. Anyone else want to throw out a book? Or is it rapid fire time?
Yeah, all I got is quick picks at this point.
Yeah, go with quick picks.
All right. Rapid fire. Let's pull this list up. All right. Batman Eternal number 10. I enjoyed this book. It's obviously not very new reader friendly. You kind of have to understand what the, you know, where the story has been so far for the last 10 weeks. But it is moving things along. I'm not a fan of this Professor Pig. Is it Professor Pig?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this Professor Pig character, but he does play a pivotal role in this. If anyone has read The Long Halloween, Batman The Long Halloween, you'd be well served to read it, one, because it's a good story, and two, it'll get you familiar and up to speed with who Carmine Falcone is, just in case you haven't watched any of the Batman Begins movies or anything like that. But, it's like I said, it's moving things along. Because it's a weekly book, it's hard to pick it up in the middle. I think I've missed a few of the more recent installments, so I kind of lost track of where we were. There is a character in this that I didn't understand, that I didn't know had been introduced. Spoiler alert. Dirt, you may have some insight on this. When was in the pre-New 52, did they introduce Alfred's daughter?
Pre-New 52, I believe so. I believe sometime in the 60s or 70s. Okay. But post-crisis, not that I recall offhand.
Okay, so she's in this book. I guess that she has appeared within the last two issues, she's definitely going to be part of the story. Stephanie Brown is in this issue, for all you spoiler fans out there. For a brief moment, but they're trying. They're going to be building up to establishing her character, I think. So very quickly, like I said, it's a tough read for anyone that's new to it.
Who's the artist on it?
I think there's a number of artists, because I recall the art kind of being going back and forth. Right.
Yeah, because weekly they split it up between a couple different people.
Well, I mean, just on this issue, they had multiple artists.
Yeah, because there's the different plot lines that are going on. If you're following, like, the Stephanie Brown story is kind of disconnected from what's going on with Batman. So it's like that's being handled by a different artist, even though, because it's Batman and it's a weekly, they'll collide at some point. But for now, it's she's been running away from her parents, who she found out were supervillains and whatever. So she's kind of off doing her own thing. You just know that, they'll collide eventually.
All right.
I noticed that Gilliam March's art was kind of iffy for me on the last two issues.
Mm.
Some of his proportions for body parts were way off.
Ouch. Ouch. All right. Let me see. What else can I throw out here? Hulk number 4, Wade and Bagley. You can definitely tell that Wade is probably, I wasn't happy with how they dealt with the Abomination in this issue. And just to get people up to speed, Bruce Banner's been shot in the head. And, he's not healing necessarily properly. By hulking out, his brain hasn't been allowed time to heal. So basically, what's the term of art for something that falls out of the sky? I guess it's Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, I've never understood that, whatever that's saying.
Right. Well, basically, in order to heal Bruce Banner's brain and make him super smart again, they introduce from the Iron Man stories, spoiler alert, where's the bell? Extremis. But what they try to do, try to localize the Extremis application in Bruce Banner and try to use it just to fix his brain. But you know what happens with Extremis. It's never good. So that's going to be a plot line for future stories.
Great.
You know, that's sort of how I'm guessing that's how they put Bruce Banner back together again, like Humpty Dumpty, very quickly. You know, they get him back up to speed so that he can still be smart and they can have him participate in Illuminati things, you know, right away.
Well, which brings that up, actually, because that was kind of touched on in New Avengers 19, albeit not in this way, because basically Bruce was doing something in that book that kind of kept him in control.
Right. Well, this was to make him smart again.
Right.
New Avengers number 19. I was tempted to make this my click of the week. It's funny that I didn't mention it earlier. I'm glad you brought it up. Anyone else read this?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. I like this. Right. I like this book because it was almost the it was a long drawn out what do we do now?
Right.
Right? It's like, well, we have these two groups of heroes and it's like, all right, we have this pretty much no-win situation. What do we do now? And, you know, leave it to Namor to kind of cut to the chase. And ultimately, we all knew where this was going. You know, the cover kind of gives it away, right? But ultimately, you know, Namor just says, you know what? I'm done with this. And I think this is foreshadowing his role in the Cabal, or the new Cabal that's going to be in Axis, in the Axis crossover coming up in the fall.
Yeah, Namor has never had any kind of... he never had any kind of false assumptions about what could happen during his role and everything he's been doing. So he's kind of been the one who's like, look, we're going to be this way. I'm going to be this way. So at one way or another, because he knows what he has to do and what he was going to eventually end up doing.
Right.
And out of the whole group, he's kind of the one that's level-headed, I guess. Not level-headed.
But he's probably the most pragmatic.
Right. Yeah. He knows. He basically knows what they're pussyfooting around for.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they even say it's like everybody's becoming a monster, in a sense. So, and even I think when this book first started, I think T'Challa kind of had that sense, and that's why he kind of mentioned in the beginning. Was like, okay, I know this could happen, but like, hopefully it won't. That I become the monster that I know I probably will be. So. And everybody just kind of to the point where it was like, all right, things are kind of falling apart and just getting to the point where there's nothing that we can do to go back to any kind of sane way of doing things.
Right. Did anyone read Superman Wonder Woman number 9?
I haven't had a chance yet, no.
Okay, I'm not going to spoil it too much, but what I missed was I didn't get a chance to go back and read. I'm going to do it now. Action Comics number 32, I believe it was, from last week.
Uh-huh.
The first part of this doomed storyline.
Who's been keeping up with this doomed storyline, by the way?
I read, I think the prequel or the precursor to it. So I read that, but I missed Action Comics number 1, which was the first issue of the crossover. So this issue is a little bit tough to pick up and pick up where things have been. But, you know, basically Superman has been infected with some sort of doomsday virus. And I wasn't.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I mean, basically the idea of doomsday, of course, is that he was designed as an end of the world weapon. You know, anything that you use to destroy him makes him stronger and he comes back. Even, you know, to go so far as if you atomize him, his atoms will reconfigure in some way and he'll come back as something else that is still deadly and destructive. And so basically what happens is Doomsday breaks out of the Phantom Zone where he's been in prison. And so, you know, Superman is just straight up got to destroy him before he gets too powerful again. And when he destroys him, he basically destroys him to dust. And he accidentally inhales a bunch of that dust. So he basically has the dust of Doomsday in his system. And the way Doomsday is that it's trying to reconfigure and rebuild itself. And because it's in Superman's body, it's trying to use Superman's body to rebuild Doomsday. So suddenly Doomsday is growing as a part of him, infecting his cells and turning his body into Doomsday's body. So they have really... tried to do something completely different. Like they sat down and said, okay, we think we know everything about Doomsday. How can we do something that's at least a different spin on the character you're familiar with in the story you think you know? I am a couple chapters behind on everything that's been happening with all of this, but yeah, that's basically the idea behind it.
All right. So we only get a little bit of development in the story in this issue. You can tell from the cover who appears in the book. And as I said, there's not all that much of a development story-wise in this particular chapter of the crossover.
This is, seems like it's a long crossover, too.
Well, they've broken it into different sections. So it's like right. The time it was, you know, issues to set up Doomsday's return and the fight with Superman, and then it was three issues of him knowing that that something's wrong with him, but not really understanding what it is. And then now we're into the part where he knows what's going on and everybody else has pretty much figured it out. And now they, you know, trying to figure out how to stop him and see if they can reverse it and whatever. So it's played out in different, you know, chunks. They're not doing it as a straight up, you know, here's the beginning, here's the end of the crossover. It's playing out, you know, differently throughout the different books that it's doing. So like in the Superman books, it didn't have Doomed across the cover, but it was still a tie-in and characters were still reacting to the stuff that was happening in like Action Comics and Superman Wonder Woman. Even though in that particular one, it didn't have the Doomed banner across the top, it was still kind of a tie-in and a side chapter to the story.
Okay. I was just curious because like, I read the first couple of issues and I was like, I had to remind myself, I'm not the biggest Superman fan, so I'll just stick to like Action Comics and what's the other book I'm reading? I guess I'm reading Batman Wonder Woman or Superman Wonder Woman. See, I don't, can't get the characters right. Superman Wonder Woman. And see, there's one issue I'm. One book I'm missing. Maybe it's just action and
Batman Superman.
I might stop that one too. I haven't read the last couple of issues since they screwed up the publishing of the World's Finest crossover First Contact. I just kind of stopped reading Batman Superman. No real reason, but like I said, I've been looking for stuff to trim from the list.
Sure, don't blame you. All right. Let's see if there's any more rapid fire issues out there. Anyone else?
I got one. She-Hulk number 5.
I did not get a chance to read this. How was it?
Yay. That's I know, right? Ringing endorsement. Exactly. And the only reason why I'm saying that is because the art, I have never heard of this dude before, Ron Wimberly. Okay. They got a new artist on the book, but Charles Soule still writing it. The art's kind of put me off on it, off this issue. But
wait, so Polito probably just took a break. You know, this is probably a filler issue.
Yeah,
I don't remember reading anything about Polito being off the book.
Yeah, now as far as the art, yeah, that could be the case. But this is still going along with the storyline of that I guess started last issue with the blue file that She-Hulk was kind of wondering about, and now they're investigating it and trying to see what all of the people that were involved, that were made to be involved in this story, which seems like it was something that made me feel like it was something that was around. And I don't know if there was any ties to any actual Avengers books, but this was around the time of
Disassembled?
No, actually before that. This was when Captain Marvel, I think she was Photon at the time, I think at that time, when she led Monica Rambeau led the team.
Oh, long ago. Okay.
Yeah. It seemed like it was around that time. Either that or when Dr. Druid tried to take over the team, one or two. Yes, either way, it was around that time. I don't know if that has, it may or may not have anything to do with this, but it's just that there are people that were around there, or at least a couple in particular that were around there. But they're just basically going around and talking to people who were mentioned in the file. The problem is that anytime somebody gets mentioned in the file, I mean, that mentioned that they talk to, things start happening. So Hellcat's talking to Tigra. They're having a nice little chat. She brings it up, and then things happen. She-Hulk's talking to Shocker. That was kind of an interesting little conversation altogether. The story itself, and I still don't know what's going on, but we're getting slow hints about what's really going on with the paralegal, like her personal assistant and that monkey, chimpanzee, whatever it is. But we still don't know because they're not saying anything about it. But outside of that, like I said, the art was really kind of off-putting.
Wow. I'm going to take a look at this now.
But it was a decent read outside of that, I guess. It was. Okay. I got through it. So.
Gotcha. All right. I'm out of books.
Clicks of the week time.
Sounds good. All right. Well, I'll lead because I just mentioned what's probably going to be my click of the week, which is New Avengers number 19. As I said in my review, it was kind of a great, what do we do now issue. So, so here we are, two super teams who are mostly good. Can't say that they're totally good. You can't say that they're the total good guys because they're both prepared to do, make very hard choices to save their worlds, even if it means destroying another one. So it's a great kind of back and forth between these two teams before the inevitable happens, and that's going to be the next issue. But the book was a good read. I'm going to steal a little bit of Tim's notes. Nice to see some Hickman mumbo jumbo really getting to something, and that's where this is going. It does take, if you're not if you're an older reader and you're used to seeing a book like this kind of happen in maybe half the pages. But, with things being written so that they fit nicely into a trade paperback, in this book, I think it was given more than, an adequate enough space to expand on what would happen if something like this were to occur with two, mostly good intentioned, well-intentioned teams kind of meeting up and saying, all right, so what do we do now?
Right. And it ends up being a us or them situation, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And both sides were in that situation. So this is going to be, that next issue is going to be pretty interesting.
Sure. So that's my click of the week.
I'm going to go ahead and stick with Mighty Avengers number 11. I kind of thumbed through it, but from what I gathered of it, it's shaping up pretty good.
Mine's easily Figment number one, spoke of earlier. Just everything about it was great. Everybody nice. Needs to read it, and if you don't read it, you're a bad person.
Ah! Mine's going to be Avengers Undercover number 5.
Nice. I like that too.
Give it some love.
It's a good choice.
Cool. So wait, it was all Marvel books? Oh no, I got to change mine.
Hey, just like last week.
Hey, I can't help it because I'm always going to read more Marvel stuff. I'm way behind.
Listen, I didn't get to Angry Birds number one. I'm sorry.
My son did. Hey, my son said it was great. He loved it.
Nice.
I did make sure to read Starlight, though, to get a non-Marvel book on my list for the week.
I must say, I have one. I just hadn't read it yet.
All right, so I want to thank everyone for tuning in live, if you happen to be tuning in live or watching the replay. I'm actually behind on uploading the audio for the audio podcast, so I need to get on that. I want to wish Agent 70 a fun trip to Special Edition New York
City. Absolutely. I will have a report and hopefully some things to contribute to the website. Post special edition NYC, I'm going to be going as, this will be my first one sort of as a correspondent really, but, I'll still be, only a portion correspondent and mostly still going as a fan. So, I'm breaking in slowly but surely into going as a correspondent. So hopefully,
as long as you're breaking in and not breaking bad.
That's right. Because I'll be knocking. It'll be an interesting experience. Like I said, I'll try to take pictures, and have and try to touch base with some of the creators that might be more amenable to coming on the show or having maybe some quick questions for creators and doing like a quick post about what's coming up, what they're enjoying, how they feel about the show, et cetera, et cetera.
Great. And we will have a special guest on next week's show who should we'll save the reveal for next week, so leave fans and listeners something to bring you back for next time. And with that, you should follow us on our...
That's right!
So in the background, Agent 70's house is real excited about that.
This is New York City, baby.
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts at TimDOGG98. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Please do.
And hope to see some of y'all next weekend at HeroesCon.
Yes, we will talk about that next week, along with our interview with a very special guest. So look forward to that. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.